road again. Just can't wait to get on the road again.
I'm a traveling man,
king of the road.
Hit the road, Jack.
Riding on the city of New Orleans.
Kicks out the Route 66.
That's entertainment.
Let's go on with the show.
Welcome, everyone, to a fabulous-looking Sunday afternoon. I'm Tom Romano with Sports Leisure Vacations' Mark Hoffman. Another episode of the Travel Guys radio program is underway. And first of all, a salute to all of our servicemen and women that may be listening, past and present, and this is your special weekend.
All those who have fought, are fighting, or will go in the future, thank you. We salute all of you.
Today on the program, we have, as we mentioned, really, and the one that I'm most intrigued with coming up on the back half of the hour is our airline pilot, and we asked him some really good questions, the kind of things I think that our listeners would want to ask.
Absolutely, and we've been trying to get an airline pilot for a long time to go on the air with us, and would you know it, Tom, after we got Henry this week, and 2 days later, I talked to another one, so we're going to have, and this airline pilot runs a flight attendant school, so he's going to be our guest on a future program. Next week, we're going to be live from Cape Cod on the other side of the country. You will be here. I will be there. Sorry about that.
That's okay. We will negotiate it. I have Mike Murray working on all the technical ends. We'll get you at some cabana or something there where you can broadcast from.
Exactly.
All right. Let's do what we always do at the beginning of the show, and we get right to the travel news. Find out what's been going on since we spoke to you last week. The Mark Hoffman Trio Jazz Quintet. Whatever it is. Mark, what's
every
new?
Every week there's a new list of best of this, best of that. One that caught my eye this week that we'll lead off the news with is done by a gentleman named, named Cece Lumpley. The fifth Lumley. Well, I butchered that,
okay.
But that's all right. Cece's not here anyway, so it doesn't really matter. The 15 best things to do in America. This is kind of a personal, private list. Contains things like Big Bend in Texas, the Café du Monde in New Orleans, you know, where you get those wonderful beignets, those little donuts that are just, like, covered mm-hmm. with powdered sugar and make an incredible mess. Falling Water, Frank Lloyd Wright's house in Pennsylvania. Key West, one of my favorites. And here's one I thought, this is how you know this is an objective list. Interstate 90 across North Dakota.
Yeah, I saw that. Great Plains.
Yeah, exactly. I thought some of these. And here's one especially appropriate for Memorial Day. The Vietnam Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C., completed in 1982. That's the one that's kind of V-shaped and is somewhat below ground there. It's very striking.
See, your favorite place, Key West, Florida.
Absolutely is on this list here. Seneca Falls, the slave market in Charleston, South Carolina, the Trail of Tears. Some cool things. Anyway, go to travelguysradio.com. You can see the whole list. That was kind of the point of that. A festival for Americans Tool, the Duct Tape Festival.
Sure.
We couldn't go without telling you this. It'll be held on June the 18th. Only thing is, you're going to need a plane ticket. It's in Avon, Ohio. Starts on Friday afternoon at 4 o'clock with a parade at the Veterans Memorial Park. If you'd like to be a part of the Duct Tape Festival, we've got that on the website also. There.
Yeah, hosted in the duct tape capital of the world.
The duct tape.
With a T.
Say that three times fast. Be a smarter traveler. Speaking of our website, travelguysradio.com, traveling with coworkers can be tricky, but that can be multiplied if you're traveling with your boss. If you are traveling with your boss, you have to be at your best and at your most competent. On your best behavior, you want to come across as low maintenance as possible, and this can extend from your suitcase to your dinner orders to your clothes. I know my employees travel with me all the time. We found a list of things that would help you in traveling with your boss. So in the Be a Smarter Traveler department, go to travelguysradio.com, and you can see traveling together, you and your boss. Links from today's show give you some ideas about how to travel with your boss. Looks like the glory days may be over in Amsterdam. For some people, indeed, the Dutch government on Friday said it would start banning tourists from buying cannabis from coffee shops and impose restriction on Dutch customers by the end of the year. The Netherlands is well known for having one of Europe's most liberal soft drug policies that has made its cannabis shops a popular tourist attraction, particularly in Amsterdam. Under the new rules, only Dutch residents will be able to sign up as members of cannabis shops. The policy will roll out in southern provinces at the end of the year and the rest of the country by next year. The spokesman said no more smoking weed on the streets of Amsterdam.
Well, what does that, you know, what does that tell the rest of the world?
Another
you know?
Great institution is ending. That's what it tells the rest of the, well, you know, it's a governmental thing and swings back and forth. And I was just in Amsterdam a couple of months ago, and it's, yeah, it is obvious that Amsterdam is, the pendulum is kind of swinging back towards the middle. But Amsterdam's a wonderful, friendly, great, vibrant city. So dare I say it doesn't really need the sin vices that it's been famous for the last 15 or 20 years in order to be a really great place to visit. But it doesn't hurt, you know.
There you go.
Yeah, well, it's, you know, if to each his own. But anyway.
Well, you know, here again, like I say, it's what does this mean? It means that perhaps legalizing marijuana in different parts of the United States eventually after it's a while will go away.
Exactly
too.
What we talked about was that the fact that, you know, it's no longer the big deal to go to Amsterdam if you can buy it in other places. Why, then you're not going to be, it's, you know, it takes away one of the reasons to go there. However, there are a lot of wonderful reasons to go to Amsterdam as a city. And so I don't think they're going to suffer too much. They appear to be doing just fine.
One of the things we're going to do every week here on the Travel Guys, and that is update you with the Sports Leisure Travel Club members. It's the Traveler's Update, if you will. I'm going to write a special musical piece that we will use at this very location of the show from here on out, but that's next week. But this week we're going to give you a little jazz, a little Dixieland, because it's Dixieland Jazz Weekend. All right, Mark, what do we have for the Traveler?
This is Sports Leisure Traveler Update. Save the date, Department reservations for our annual tour preview day, which will be held Saturday, August the 27th at the Marriott Hotel, will be accepted beginning July the 1st. There will be 3 show times, and Canada is the featured destination for this year's event. 2 Travel Club members have had their membership numbers selected to be today's lucky listeners. They are Barbara Rumzek and Judy Parsons. Barbara's number is 41090 and Judy Parsons 28345. Barbara and Judy, you have until 4:30 p.m. Tuesday afternoon to call the Sports Leisure Vacations office to claim $100 in free tour cash. You can become a member of the Sports Leisure Travel Club. It's free. Go to travelguysradio.com and click on the Sports Leisure Vacations link. A 6-month trial membership is free. Sports Leisure Vacations, we currently have groups traveling in Iceland and Alaska, have a group departing on a 4-day mystery tour on Tuesday, and another to Sequoia and Kings Canyon National Parks next week. The Broadway show Billy Elliot has been incredibly popular for us, but good seats remain for our trips in July. Call our office or go to sportsleisure.com for details. Saturday and Sunday trips are available. Wednesday matinees were limited and are completely sold out. And that is your Sports Leisure Traveler Update.
All right. Coming up in just a couple of minutes, Mark, we're heading down under.
We're going to New Zealand in a very interesting segment with Corey Marshall. You will not want to miss it. Hang right with us. We'll be right back. We're the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530.
It's the Travel Guys and Entertainment Radio Program. I'm Tom Romano along with Mark Hoffman from Sports Leisure Vacations, who used to just take people to baseball games and little sporting events about 60 miles away. However, now it's all around the world.
No more of that.
Yeah. Well, where are we traveling to today, Mark?
Well, Sports Leisure Vacations is offering a trip to New Zealand next year, and it's interesting in that it goes only to New Zealand. The first time in 2.5 decades of going to New Zealand and Australia that we haven't combined the two countries together. And New Zealand is such a small country. Australia is such a large country. And people would say, well, gee, why would you go all that distance just to spend 2 weeks on two little tiny islands that make up the country of New Zealand?
Why would you do that, Mark?
Why would you do that? Well, you know, I've always been told, and based on my experience, that New Zealand is an incredibly beautiful place to visit. And so my good friend Corey Marshall, who is president and CEO of Anderson Vacations, is a gentleman who puts together tours to New Zealand, and he had a rather enticing package, and so we have collaborated on it. Good afternoon, Corey.
Good morning, Mark. It's morning down here in New Zealand, and a beautiful day today.
Yeah, okay. Well, it's nice. It's nice to have you, Corey, all the way from the land down under. And I hope things are well down there.
They are, and we're excited to host your group next January.
Last time we spoke with you on this program, we were talking about Christchurch, and in 25 words or less, how are things there post-earthquake?
Things are still on their way to recovery. The nice thing about the tourism industry down here is it's resilient. And the other nice thing about Christchurch itself is tourists are still using Christchurch as a hub. They aren't obviously going down into the CBD and won't be for quite some time, or Central Business District. They're able to use Christchurch Airport as a hub to explore the South Island. So really, things are almost back to normal in terms of the standard tourism itinerary.
Well, and we probably should share with people that most groups, you mentioned using Christchurch as a hub, most groups either use it as a hub and spoke or just as a stopover, an entry or exit point from the country or from the island or whatever. So it's an important part of an itinerary, especially the opportunity to go to the square and watch people talking and rambling on about anything. But it's an important part of an itinerary, but not a necessary part of going to New Zealand per se. I mean, you could have you could leave out Christchurch and still have a wonderful trip to New Zealand. I'm sure the people in Christchurch wouldn't want us to say that, but that's true. However,
very true, very true. So lots of other places to explore.
So. You have convinced me that coming to New Zealand and spending a whole 2-week period down there is really what it takes to immerse yourself and to really have the New Zealand experience. Tell me why that is. What is it that makes New Zealand so special?
Well, Mark, your program is actually 16 days that I enticed you with, and I do feel that it's the perfect amount of time to explore New Zealand. My wife is a Kiwi and a proud New Zealander, and so what we've put together for you and your group is outstanding. The nice thing about New Zealand is the way that the New Zealand community has embraced their native or Maori culture, and I think you'll see this right as you're across the country. They've embraced it. They've made it a market-ready tourism product, so you're going to see a Maori haka or a dance. You're going to have a Maori dinner while you're on tour, and this is as you travel through the vast scenery of New Zealand. I think that's what also makes it so special. You know, they have the beautiful, lush greenery, the high, towering mountains, and then you could be skiing in a mountain and surfing at a beach all on the same day because they have their white and black sand beaches, both of which you'll see on your program. The nice thing with 16 days versus what used to be the 24-day dream Australia and New Zealand vacation package is with 16 days you get to do multiple night stays. Or two-night stays in some of the best destinations New Zealand has to offer, like Queenstown and Wellington, Rotorua. And one of my special favorites is the Bay of Islands up in the northern part of New Zealand, where you'll get to go out and see some dolphins.
That's a place that a lot of folks leave out when they do kind of the standard New Zealand itinerary, is it not?
That's correct, yeah. A standard tour that comes to New Zealand will do Auckland and Rotorua, and really that's it. And then they'll head over to Australia for their program. Or they might do versus getting those multi-night stays in, where you can get out and see sheep shearing, you can get out and have a dinner, you know, with a local couple, or you can even take that transalpine rail journey from Christchurch to Greymouth on the South Island, which is a part of the package that you have on offer, that really people that are just coming on the whirlwind aren't going to get to experience.
We're talking with Corey Anderson all the way from New Zealand this afternoon on the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. Corey, I wanted to ask you a little bit about Milford Sound. Many folks have heard about the beautiful fjords in New Zealand, and that's, of course, in the Milford Sound area. When I was there, gosh, it's been almost a quarter of a century ago, I had the opportunity to go by land one way to Milford Sound and then fly back and fly over the fjords, which to this day remains one of the most spectacular flight-seeing things I've ever done. Talk a little bit about the Milford Sound area and the fjords.
Yeah, so the two-night stay in the Queenstown area is what's going to allow your group to experience Milford Sound. I mean, you touched on it. The fjords are absolutely amazing, and we do have the option. So the group will all take the coach out to Milford Sound, which is a wonderful drive through some of the heartland of the New Zealand South Island. They'll then get to head out on their, you know, afternoon cruise on Milford Sound, which is truly spectacular. I mean, you'll never get to be in a place with these massive towering, green cliffs all around you, having a little bit of lunch and then cruising back into Milford Sound. And then to your point, there is an option for guests to take their flight seeing option from Milfordstown back over to Queenstown trip back. So what you touched on is all part of the tour, and it's an absolutely amazing experience for your guests.
Corey, before I let you go, you've married someone from New Zealand. Obviously, there's a little bit of a draw there for you. How did that all happen? What attracted you to New Zealand?
What attracted me to New Zealand? It's the people. It's you know, everyone's very helpful, friendly. The culture here is one, you know, it's, when you come here for a holiday, you'll leave feeling relaxed. And I think that's a big part of any holiday is the people are, we call them cruisy, you know, they're chilled out, but they'll make sure you have an exceptional time and they'll embrace you while you're here. And that's what made me fall in love with my wife, and that's what made me fall in love with the country.
There you go. Yeah, Mark, how are people going to be able to hook up to visit what some people call the most beautiful country in the world?
Well, Sports Leisure Vacations is going there next February, and of course, full disclosure here, that's why I asked Corey to be on the program, is to talk a little bit about where we were going to go, but also to excite people about the concept of going to New Zealand and to plant the idea that you don't have to go to New Zealand and Australia on the same trip. Trying to do that would be like trying to see Hawaii and the west coast of the United States in 2 weeks. It's just really difficult to do. You could spend 2 weeks in Hawaii, and there are only four islands. So I think the same Corey is making the same argument with New Zealand. It's a little further than Hawaii, but it's also has an incredible amount of diversity and is a wonderful place. Corey, before we go, something really cool in New Zealand that the folks who are going down there with Sports Leisure Vacations are going to do that you haven't mentioned. What do you think is the most unique opportunity that we'll have on our 16-day visit?
Holy, that's a tough one, Mark. But for me, it's going to be your experience up in the Bay of Islands, heading out to sea on the Hole in the Rock, getting to see dolphins up close, getting that picture that no one else has back home. That's going to be my top pick for you and your group.
All right.
And maybe just a reminder to folks that when they're thinking about that long-haul flight, don't worry about it. It's an overnight flight, which means when you arrive in New Zealand, you've woke up, you've had breakfast, and you're ready to hit the ground running. So you sleep most of the way, and it makes it a really nice way to arrive into a country.
Corey Anderson from Corey Marshall. Gosh, I do that all the time. Corey Marshall from Anderson Vacations, our guest on the Travel Guys today. If you would like to learn more about New Zealand in general or about our special trip to New Zealand next February, go to TravelGuysRadio.com and just click on the link there that is next to Corey's name, and we will send you all the information about New Zealand. Thank you, Corey, for your time today.
Thanks, guys.
All right, behave yourself down there in New Zealand.
We are the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. We're the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK. I'm Tom Romano along with Sports Leisure Vacations' Mark Hoffman, and we have the unique opportunity to get people on our radio program that, you know, others rarely do. And Mark, you've been trying for some time to line us up with an airline pilot that we could quiz and talk about that experience and give others an opportunity to ask questions. And we certainly have some of those. Who did you line up for us here?
Well, I think we found somebody that might be somebody that has maybe a little bit more than just an airline pilot. And we would like you to meet him today. His name is Henry Bernanke.
Bernanke, yes.
Got it right, Henry?
Yes,
Henry,
sir.
Henry is a pilot for Virgin America Airlines and has been flying for them for the last couple, 3 years out of San Francisco. And he joins us today from San Jose. Is that right?
Yes, sir.
And Henry, in addition to flying, has written a book called No More Heroes. We're going to talk a little bit about that also. Henry, how did you become an airline pilot?
I was traveling around the world in 1997. Basically sleeping in the streets, and I spent $3,700 that year. And I talked to enough pilots at airports, and they told me the route they'd taken, and so I decided that on my way back that when I was in the U.S., I could maybe take up flying that way. And so, I actually did.
So you spent a year just traveling around the world on a pretty, what do we call it, on a poverty level, would that be?
Yeah, pretty much. I literally slept in the streets, yeah.
It's kind of ironic because on this program we have a guest, a gentleman who is a blogger who regularly defeats the system. He's the guy who always volunteers to get bumped off the flight. And he brags to us that last year, I believe, he spent about $3,900 and traveled a couple hundred thousand miles around the world on airplanes, mostly in first class.
You know, yeah, a lot of people assume that all airline pilots are those that maybe flew in the military and, gosh, spent, you know, a half a lifetime becoming an airline pilot. And, Henry, I think you're proving to a lot of people that might be listening that anybody that might be thinking this is something they can do, it can be done.
It definitely can. The civilian route is a more difficult route because of the money and the time commitment that we as individuals place into that. There's no job security. You go in and hopefully get your private instrument, commercial single, commercial multi-engine, and then after you have your commercial multi-engine, you are not marketable. You have no hours. Somehow you have to get your hours from 250 hours to about 1,500 hours.
Now, Henry, you mentioned to us before we went on the air that you have flown a variety of different aircraft.
Yes, sir.
So, and that has been a little bit of a decision that you made, a conscious decision, that most pilots stay with one aircraft or at least one company, but that you have chosen to kind of broaden your horizons. Has that worked in your favor?
It actually has, and not in terms of financial outcomes, but the knowledge and experience that I have gained because of the people that taught me how to be a safer pilot. A lot of those gentlemen are retired now, and before Virgin, now I'm currently on the Airbus 319 and 320. I was at China Airlines flying the Boeing 747-400, and before that I was at Omni Air International flying 757, 767 around the world on what we call ETOPS with two engines over water. But I believe that definitely helped me understand that you don't know what you don't know until somebody of greater experiences teaches it to you.
Henry, of course, things have changed a lot for us that fly since 9/11. What has changed for you as a pilot, a commercial airline pilot, since 9/11?
Since 9/11, I believe for us, they're trying to make it a little bit easier to go through security. A couple months or years, it's been a little bit more difficult. They tried to scrutinize us, those in uniform, because I guess the next kind of attack, if they were going to try and do it, was going to be in uniform. And so the TSA tried to become a little bit more strict with that. But companies have gone out of their way to help pilots and in flight to go through security a little bit better and easier. But the training on the hijacking and terrorists is definitely, they always are more mindful when you go in for what we call recurrent training to go over that a little bit more in depth.
Now, do you spend a lot of time on that, Henry? Is that something that's constantly updated? Or?
Yes, I think security is always being updated because once you've changed one system, then they're going to try and adapt to that system. But we're always updating it as a company, trying to be safer and more mindful of what our security procedures are, because every company is very different. And Virgin, I know definitely Mark Vorzimer, the gentleman that takes care of our security, he's very mindful of that. He has 26 years experience in the aviation industry, and he does a wonderful job, and he makes sure us pilots are very well aware of our security procedures.
What is it from the standpoint of passengers that we don't know about airline pilots and what goes into doing your job? What do you think the biggest misnomer or lack of knowledge we have about airline pilots?
There's probably two things that I often hear when I'm jump seating or going place to place on an airplane, not only on Virgin but other airlines, is A, we don't really fly the airplane. Everybody thinks we just push buttons up there.
Now, Henry, I got to break in here because one of my staff asked this question. He said, ask him, when he's up there in the sky, how much of the time do they really spend flying the airplane?
There's that question.
Yeah.
That's the question everybody always asks me. What are we really doing up there behind the closed door?
Okay.
It literally depends on what sort of flying you're doing. If you're doing over the water Pacific or North Atlantic track, they call it the NATS, or cross country or an hour flight to LA from San Francisco. It really does depend on every company is different procedural wise and what we're following. If it's an hour flight, it's pretty much nonstop what we're doing because you've taken off. You're already preparing for your landing, so you only get about maybe 10 minutes of getting everything situated. So what we have approach charts that we have to get out for in Los Angeles, and we're switching those out, and then you have to brief. So the flying, there's levels of automation, and we can hand fly, which our company says, yeah, hand fly as much as you want, and other ones say autopilot on at this altitude, but we're still telling the computers, the autopilot, what we want it to do. So we're literally engaged with the levels of automation. We decide as pilots, captains and first officers, what level of automation we wish to use during a particular phase of flight, what we call.
Our guest on the Travel and Entertainment Guys this afternoon is Henry Bernacki.
Yes, sir.
Am I getting it right?
Yes.
Henry is a pilot for Virgin America, and we're just kind of talking about some pilot-type stuff here. Let me ask you another question, Henry. Recently, here in the States, we've had several episodes where air traffic controllers have been found to have been sleeping on the job. You're a pilot. Does this alarm you? And is that really a great concern? I mean, what would happen there if you were flying an airplane and you couldn't get the air traffic controller?
Well, if it's close to the ground, you're always wondering, am I on the wrong frequency? So I always take it, or did we as pilots mess up? And if we did, how do we rectify it? How do we correct this scenario? Then you go back to the previous frequency. But ATC controllers in the past, I think they're amazing. Here in the U.S., they're in Canada, in Europe, they're very well trained. English is not a problem.
So is this kind of blown out of proportion, or is this something that we truly should be concerned about? Are you concerned about it?
I am definitely not concerned about it at all.
Okay. Well, that's a pretty strong answer. Henry, we need to take a little bit of a break here. Can we get you to stay with us, and we'll come back and talk a little bit more about your book?
Of course, please.
Okay, that sounds great. Our guest is Henry Bernacki. He is a pilot for Virgin America Airways, and he is our guest here on the Travel Guys. We'll talk more with Henry when we come back. You're listening to News Talk 1530 KFBK. Welcome back. We are the Travel Guys. Mark Hoffman here, along with Tom Romano. We are joined on the phone by Henry Bernacki. Henry is a pilot for Virgin America Airways, and we're just kind of chit-chatting about some of the things that pilots do and what their responsibilities are and things like that. Henry, what's your pet peeve with the traveling public? You seem like a pretty easygoing, pretty nice guy, but there must be something that just drives you nuts about airline passengers.
I would say that the misunderstanding that they have that the airplane, if you would think from JFK, an airplane leaves at 4 in the morning California time, and it arrives at a certain time, say 10 a.m. California time, and it actually gets within a window of takeoff, which is very precise, and it actually works for the most part, that the on-time arrival and departure is just amazing when you're dealing with about on an airplane 160 guests. It's leaving on time from New York, arriving in San Francisco, and then it's going to leave San Francisco within a certain period of time within the actual departure time. And when it doesn't work out, the guests get really, really upset and wonder how that is. And just imagine going up from San Jose to San Francisco during rush hour, and then add some weather on top of that, and then getting people in and out of your car. I think that right there, the objectivity of thinking outside the box of, hey, I have to be here at this time, and they do pay for a ticket, but that it actually works in our system in the United States very, very well.
You know, Henry, I'm always stunned at actually the accuracy. Of course, Mark flies like 250 days out of the year, but I'm always impressed that you know, within minutes of the arrival on a lot of flights that you're there, and considering how many hundreds of miles, in some cases thousands of miles, that you had to travel, that you could show up within a window of just a few minutes and then take off within just a few minutes. I do appreciate and impressed by that.
And, you know, Henry, as you watched the other night when the tornadoes were going on and we were watching all of the planes stacked up out on the radar outside of Dallas-Fort Worth and stuff like that, that must present some really interesting situations when you're dealing with weather. What happens when you get up there in the air and there's only so much fuel in that aircraft? You have some decisions to make, I would think, when you run into some bad weather.
Definitely. And our dispatchers and most dispatchers in other companies, but I'll speak about Virgin, they definitely talk to the captains and say, are you fine with this amount of fuel? Would you like more? Would you like less? But then if you carry too much fuel, you're actually burning more fuel because you're actually heavier. So you really don't want to carry too much because then you're burning more fuel than you're actually using because it's so much heavier aircraft. And you have to have a certain amount of reserves once you arrive at your destination anyways. But if the weather's bad, now you have to add a little bit more reserves in case you have to go to an alternate airport. And once we took off, just going to Dallas I'd say 4 days ago, we had a reroute, and it added 20 minutes to our flight plan. And so you're constantly keeping your company, the dispatchers, up in the loop, fuel on board, this is our new route instead of this route. And we would have been 40 minutes early, but it ended up we were right on time, and because we just kept getting reroutes around the bad weather down in Dallas, actually.
Sounds like the cockpit is a busy place.
It really is, and there's always that mindset, you're in the now. You're conscious of this now, but where do you need to be? And it's always conscious of, okay, I need to be on the ground at the parking gate with the parking brakes set. And you're thinking, how do you get there? The safest way to get there. And it's just not two guys in the, yeah, we're the ones making the decisions, but there's a company down on the ground actually there to help if you need anything as well.
Henry, next time I get into the sky, I want you flying the plane. Listen, let's divert here a little bit from the pilot and passenger talk here. You have a book that you have written called No More Heroes. Please tell us about it. How did it come to be and what is it about?
Well, it's a fiction book, and the first 116 pages or so is about a young man named Nicholas and Surya, who's in her 80s, and she's sick, and he actually meets her, and they become friends. And through their friendship, he talks about traveling because she's never traveled, and she talks about her life, her husband, love, and she's sick, so she's talking about death quite a bit. And their friendship is quite unique because it obviously the age is something that most people are not friends with when you're in your 20s with an 80-year-old. But their unique conversations, what keeps the book going and has people go into it more. And then the rest of the book is about Nepal. The undertones of traveling are there, but literally the book is about the people and the lives of Surya and Nicholas. And she introduces Nicholas to her eclectic group of friends of San Francisco, where I bring in the festivals of San Francisco, certain parts of San Francisco, and the lives intertwined with not only the city and Nepal, but everybody together. It is undertones of poeticness is how James Montoya, who is the former dean of admission from Stanford, he'd give me a review, a very nice review, which is on the website, and he talks about the undertones of poeticness that the book is written with.
What was your inspiration for writing this book, Henry?
I guess my job is literally traveling, because the way I travel is so, I don't know where I'm going. I just get on an airplane, I go. I don't have any reservations. And I think adaptability, and then the people I was meeting along the way, I just wanted to keep it in a fiction format, but also have these conversations that I have with people, random people, to almost bring it alive. And so the people that I meet along the way, but I wanted to give them different characters, are really why I wrote the book, and I didn't want to put myself in it. I wanted to have fiction characters, so the characters are more alive than me if I was in the book.
So, Henry, is the book based on your own personal experiences when, as you have traveled the planet? Is it a compilation? Is it strictly fiction?
I believe fiction, no matter how you swing it, it's going to have some truth to it. And the characters are in it. They have some truth of the characters that I have met in real life. And that's because they've meant so much to me as a traveler and as a human. But I say fiction because I can't have everything 100% accurate, and I don't want to get later on in the future say, hey, that's highly inaccurate, and now we're going to do something about it.
Well, Henry, I see on your website that you are having a book signing in Reno in June. If you get one in Sacramento, I hope that you will make us aware of it so that we can talk about it here on the radio. We will tell folks to go to travelguysradio.com. You can find a link there to Henry's website, which will tell you all about the book, how you can get it, how you can order it, and how you can even send Henry an email if you like. Henry, I can't tell you how much we appreciate the time that you've given us today. Henry is a pilot for Virgin America Airlines, and I hope that you will join us again here on the Travel Guys, and we can maybe take some phone calls from our listeners and give them an opportunity to ask the question of an airline captain that they've always wanted.
It would be my pleasure, and I would definitely like to thank you for allowing me to come on the show and speak about flying and briefly about my book. It was definitely a pleasure, sir. Gentlemen.
Thank you, Henry, and we'll see you in the skies, buddy.
I look forward to it.
Outstanding. We are the Travel Guys. It's News Talk 1530 KFBK.
We have one more guest to go on the program today. And, Tom, this is a particularly good piece of information. Be a smarter traveler. For those folks who travel with their pets or are going to travel with their pets this summer, here's exactly what you need to know.
And Mark, we are really, really lucky today. We have in the studio with me Dr. Annette Whiteford from the California Department of Food and Ag, and she is the California State Veterinarian and knows all about traveling with pets. So let's begin. Do a lot of folks travel with pets these days?
More and more people do. Well, maybe always people have traveled with their pets, because you and I know that sometimes your best friend is your pet. And so who better to share an adventure with?
And not only that, you know, taking the pet along a lot of times is more fun for the pet. They get to be with you all the time than either having the neighbor kid pop in once a day, you know, to let them out and then bring them back in. So it's a pretty big deal. You know, there's a few things that people need to know about traveling with pets if they haven't. Or why don't you share with us, first of all, traveling with cats and dogs, you know, where do you begin? If you're gonna take a plane trip or a road trip, what's the first thing you need to do?
Sure. Probably the most important thing to do is to talk to your veterinarian, because your pet, just like your friends and the people you know, they're different. Every pet is different, and your veterinarian knows your pet's health better than most people. So the first thing to do is talk to your veterinarian and get their advice on travel.
Now, I do know that the airlines, I think, require in a lot of cases some certificates. What should you do there to make sure that you're in compliance before you travel?
Right, and your second, actually, maybe your first call should be, if you're planning to use an airline, call the airline first and ask them a couple of things. Ask them what they require, what type of paperwork they require, and talk to them a little bit about the conditions that the pet will be held in. Sometimes you can fly with them in the seat next to you, but sometimes if you have a large dog, you may have to keep the dog in the hold. And airline holds are set up so that they can house dogs. But you want to find out specifically from your airline what those conditions are. So not only in the hold of the plane, but perhaps while they're waiting to load them onto the plane, if you're transferring through Denver, are they going to be sitting on the runway in a snowstorm, that type of thing. And then also you may want to check with them on crate size. Is there limitations on crate size or crate type for your animal, both for carrying on and as well as in the hold?
A friend of mine, Adrian, who's one of the world-class dog judges from the Sacramento area, mentioned something to me, and he says, when you get on board your plane and your dog is traveling in the hold, you're not carrying it on, make sure to ask the flight attendants, is my dog on board? And have them check, because, you know, he says it's not good to show up without your animal at the other destination.
That sounds like a humorous comment, but it's also probably very practical.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know how we worry about our luggage getting there,
right,
and how upset we can be when our suitcase with our golf clubs don't show up. Think about how you'd feel if your pet didn't show up. What about destinations? You mentioned to me off air that sometimes you have to check as to where you're going, as to whether there's any requirements in that state for your pet.
Exactly. And I think that's something most people, it doesn't occur to them, but the destination point is where the determination as to what type of vaccine the animal has to have, what type of papers the animal has to have to arrive. The point of destination, the jurisdiction and the point of destination is where that is determined. So let's say you're traveling from California to Texas. It's a good idea to, and maybe just a website search or ask your veterinarian to help you, but check with Texas and find out what they require. So, for example, a dog that's over 4 months of age, most states require that they have proof of a rabies vaccine, which is a certificate that has to be signed by a veterinarian showing that they've been vaccinated, they have a current vaccine for rabies. Another, and some states or even counties actually prohibit certain types of dogs. So it's important to check with them. There's some local ordinance against certain types of dogs. So check with the destination.
Fabulous. I really appreciate you spending some time with me. Our special guest today from the California Department of Food and Ag is Dr. Annette Whiteford. She is the State of California veterinarian. And any other advice to pet owners that travel here on the travel show?
Yeah, the one thing I'd add is, if you're traveling out of the country with your pet, which is not unusual, my parents do that every single year. They bring their dog all the way down to Mexico with them, and they enjoy the trip tremendously. They spend 6 months in the warm weather with their dog. But when you're traveling out of the country, definitely talk to your veterinarian then and have them help you with this, because not only do you need that certificate of veterinary inspection or health certificate, which is a special document signed by the veterinarian attesting to the health of the animal, that certificate frequently has to be endorsed by USDA. So, and that's determined by the destination point. So if you're taking, check with the country you're going to and find out what they require, because you may need to make that extra step of contacting USDA, the United States Department of Agriculture, also.
Fabulous. Thank you for being with me today. Travel well, folks, with your pets. Pets like to travel, too. This is the Travel Guys on News Talk 1530 KFBK.
Tom, that was a spectacular interview. That is some really good information for folks who are schlepping around their pets.
Hey, you know, it was only a short time ago I was a non-pet traveler, and now I've traveled with pets, and we've had Dr. Whiteford on, and it's a lot of people do. It's a lot of fun.
Absolutely. I see our cowboy libertarian is getting ready to be all
he's got a
special Memorial Day show. I have absolutely no doubt it will rise to the occasion, knowing our friend Patrick. Kelly Brothers was here last week with us and talked about a trip to go back to Chicago and see a Notre Dame game, mm-hmm. and see a Chicago Cubs game. And lo and behold, we can only take 25 people on that trip. Would you believe we already have 20?
Wow.
So if you are interested in joining Kelly and myself to go back and see Notre Dame's home opener and see the Chicago Cubs play the Pirates and go to the Chicago Board of Trade and just have a kind of a fun Labor Day weekend back in Chicago, you need to go to travelguysradio.com. There's a link there. And speaking of Travel Guys Radio, all kinds of neat stuff on there from the program this weekend. All the links for New Zealand, links to Henry Bernanke, who is really a fascinating guest. I can't wait to get him on here. We're going to have him on in a few weeks when he can be in studio, and you folks can just call in and ask whatever question that you've always wanted to ask an airline pilot. Wasn't he a fascinating guy?
It was great. What a guy.
I really, really a terrific interview. Anyway, on our website there, you can go down and find all about Henry's book about traveling with your boss. There's a link there to traveling with your pets. Penguins on a plane, yes, indeed. A sports leisure group was on a Southwest flight a couple weeks ago, and there were penguins on board the plane. There are pictures and a story from our blog right there. Best things to do in America, we talked about that earlier. And if you want to go to the Duct Tape Festival, we got it right there. Or you could just hang around and catch up with Patrick here for the next couple hours.
Next week to Cape Cod.
Yes, we will be live from Cape Cod all the way back here to Sack of Tomatoes. I will be there. You will be here. It will be exciting.
You have a great week. Mark, what do we tell folks?
We tell